track Nelson Mandela by Hugh Masekela. Welcome to the Hukumram Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with my co-host Earlene Anthony, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. I'll call in numbers 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in skidrow.la and hit Qumran Report. Also watch us live by hitting live video. Now this week on the Qumran Report, we will reflect on the life of Nelson Mandela with some L.A. poets. We have in the studio Jamal Al-Salam, Michelle Autry. We got variety here. We got Miss Mellow Blues Houston in the studio here. And our other guests again, tell us your name again over there. Cody. We got Cody sitting in here. We're going to have a great discussion about Nelson Mandela, the life of Nelson Mandela. Welcome to the Qumran Report. Now, Nelson Mandela passed last Thursday, December the 5th, 2013, at the age of 95. He had a profound effect on South Africa, coming to terms with his racial problems. He was a man who symbolized forgiveness and moving forward. And in the second half of the show, we will be performing some pieces reflecting on Nelson Mandela in poetry, prose, and spoken word. Before we get into our discussion of Nelson Mandela, I would like to play an interview with poet Julia Stein about poetry and prose. Okay, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report and regular little Thursday story file, the first Thursday of every month. I'm talking to a great poet here, Julia Stein. Julia, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Look, can you tell our listening audience a little about your background, and then how did you get off into writing, especially becoming a known poet?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh. I was brought to Los Angeles as a baby, and I was I was sort of studying psychology at Cal State LA, and I dropped out because I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. And I got my first book out in 1984, and it was a finalist in a competition called the Whitman. And I think that made me feel very good because there was 1,200 manuscripts and I beat out 1,150. Mm-hmm. There's only 50 finalists. So that made me feel really great. So I kept on writing and putting out books. And the current book is my seventh book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's the name of your current book?
It's What Were They Like?
Mm-hmm. Okay. What was the inspiration for that?
The inspiration was the beginning of the Iraq and Afghan War. Mm-hmm. And my cousin was in Tower 2, but she survived. And my brother, he has Parkinson's, and Congress promised for the first time to give large $100 million to Parkinson's research, and mm-hmm. then cut it with the beginning of the Iraq War. Mm-hmm. So I decided instead of getting upset, I'd write a book about how people, just ordinary people, were affected by the war. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And I made portraits of people, some Iraqis, some Afghanis, and some U.S. soldiers. Mm-hmm. And it's not about battles, it's just how their lives were changed mm-hmm. by being in the war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm a veteran, too, and I'm involved with a lot of veteran relations issues. As a matter of fact, we just had a military stand down at the Vortex last week. Almost 300 veterans that came out. But let me ask you this, I always wonder, what is the difference between poetry and prose?
I think poetry has a certain rhythm, mm-hmm. and it has the sounds, and it plays with language. Mm-hmm. It has this sort of metaphorical language that plays and compares things to each other. Mm-hmm. So it goes off into imaginative realms, mm-hmm. right? Where prose is much more prosaic, mm-hmm. right? It usually sticks more to reality. And some prose could have the rhythms, but it usually doesn't have the rhythms that you hear in poetry.
Mm-hmm. And you dabble in both poetry and prose.
Yes, yes, yes.
And any other kind of writing you do, narrative writing, playwright, screenwriting, anything like that?
Well, I'm finishing a novel, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, now, this is Julia Stein. I'm anxious to hear some of her poetry tonight over here. And this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report. Thank you very much. Okay, that's poet Julia Stein talking about poetry and prose. Let's get into our discussion of Nelson Mandela. I would like to go around the table and ask, what did Nelson Mandela mean to you? Let's start off with Miss Mello.
Oh, wow. I just give thanks for President Mandela, Madiba, as President Obama calls him so affectionately. I had a chance to go to South Africa in 99, and it was a sad occasion. It was a great student from USC back 20 years ago, 93, Mombati, from Molo King, and he told us he had been in the ANC when he was a teenager. So whenever I think about South Africa, I think about some of the beautiful people that I met, how the land has been transformed with his example, and it's just so much we can learn from them. I mean, I just love him as a great leader.
Okay. Michelle.
I can't even find the words to describe. I saw the movie Friday night, and I'm still just blown away by what he did, what he lived, he and Winnie, and their the example as leaders, leadership, and how their experience really was a reflection of our experience in this country. The apartheid existed here as well. My parents are from Texas, so... his leadership, his love, his example, the truth, I think he embodied all of that. And it's something that we have to continue in the example and in everything that we do. And they were such a beautiful couple. And I'm so grateful that I was able to be a contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think we have to continue in that same legacy and legendary a real walk of his talk. I mean, he really exemplified, I think, the fight and the struggle and for freedom.
Okay.
You know, they can't be free until we are. And I think towards the end of his life, he exemplified that transcendent love.
Okay.
I wish I could say I had. I'm trying to get there. You know.
Okay. Switch up. All right. You want to say something on that?
I actually have extended family over there in South Africa. The Oyibo family is there. And I just look at it like he's a man who's just been knocked down but continued to get back up. And so many people just from the African nation have been that way. They've been knocked down, but they keep getting back up. They keep rising.
And that's something that I really admire about Nelson Mandela and so many people that have just continued to forgive no matter what people have done to them. They don't take that abuse or the negativity with them. You know, they go empty. Mm-hmm. And they continue to give love in spite of what has happened to them.
Okay.
And, you know, right. That's something that I really always admired about him.
Okay. Cody, you want to say something on that? Okay. Let's move right. Gaza. You
want to
say something? Sure.
I'll comment. Thank you so much for letting me chime in on this.
He can hear.
I mean, Nelson Mandela is one of the, is like a classic Greek opera of our times. You know, the things that have happened to him in his lifetime and that he survived them all. I was so astounded, like, by the many different breakthrough things of his career and his life. And I think that he's inspired all of us by just literally doing the impossible. I was just so blown away when he became president and reshaped that country. That was like the ending that we rarely get to see. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jamal.
Oh, absolutely. A giant amongst us. Nelson Mandela, I first started hearing about it in the early, in mid-60s. His imprisonment and my involvement in different kinds of organizations. A tremendous, tremendous life. Flawed, like most of us, but great beyond compare. And hopefully the poem I'll read later today will sum up my words.
Okay. Arlene.
I really didn't know much about Nelson Mandela. So I went to the Wikipedia and I pulled up so much information on him. It went on and on and on and on and on. But what really, well, one of the things really stood out to me, he served over 27 years in prison. And when he was released, he didn't sit around and try to get revenge on anyone. He didn't, you know, bemoan the, oh, I've been in prison and, you know, let that be his downfall. The way he forgave people and set them free and also set himself free. That's one thing that I admire about Mandela.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me throw out another question for discussion. You know, President Carter, you know, South Africa had a racial system they call apartheid, which was legal segregation. And recently, President Carter called the Israeli occupation in Palestine, he called that apartheid. Now, is there a pattern set in motion by Nelson Mandela that could provide a solution to the Palestinian problem over there with the Israelis? Who would want to comment on that?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that that is an absolutely amazing, insightful declaration. Because I received that as a declaration, because my mother used to tell me about the suffering of the Palestinian people. And, you know, one individual's suffering is everyone. And for those people to proclaim that they're God's chosen people and subjugate those people to the extent, you know, and when I say those, I mean Israeli people. And, you know, they're not even the real Jews. The original Jews were the black Jews or the Sephardim, and they were even, you know, subjected by the Hasidic or the Ashkenaz or the Caucasian Jewish people. In the name of God, they claim that they're God's chosen people, and they're still subjecting people given their history. I mean, thousands and thousands of years of being oppressed by various different other people that didn't have the same one God. And I think it's horrible. I know that that's not my God. Uh-huh. That is choosing people to oppress people to the extent that they would blow themselves up because they're drawing attention to the suffering. Uh-huh. So I, you know, I'm hoping that they can transcend and one day not be synagogues of Satan that are Jews in name only, because uh-huh. that's what it is.
Okay. Well, let me. Anybody else want to say anything on that? Yes.
I think it's worth mentioning that in many cases, Jimmy Carter has consistently, you know, made very good moral comments and statements that are worthy of a president, and you know, we might want to just relook at some of the things that he do, because he's following his faith. He's a person of faith, and yet he, you know, was able to say what everyone knows, but very few people highly placed like him are dare to say, because of our relationship, complicated relationship with Israel.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say something. I just want to say that when you think about South Africa and you think about they have the Ndebeles and the Zulus and the Tswanas and the Sotho and so many more names that we don't even know. And, you know, when you think about all those different cultures that have been coexisting and getting along for God knows eons, and then, you know, at a certain time in our modern day, you know, they had to deal with people coming from outside. But yet, like she was saying earlier, they're, because of Nelson Mandela, they were ready to reconcile and work it out and come to the table and use diplomacy. So I just feel like, I mean, that's like the greatest role model, mm-hmm. you know, how Mandela, he lived it, him and his family and all of his cohorts and all the people that worked together across religions, across colors, to say, guess what? We can use diplomacy. We can use reason. We can use, you know, our real humanity, you know, to mm-hmm. halt some of this inhumanity, you know. After that Sharpeville, I think it was a massacre in 1960, you know, and I know that energized the people, you know what I'm saying? You know, because mm-hmm. I was born in the beginning of the 60s and I started studying about this in the 90s. So mm-hmm. I'm saying the whole world can learn from the example of South Africa. And and get past, you know, all the things that have held people up. It sounds simple, but I mean, mm-hmm. that's the best example I've seen.
Okay, let me ask this question then. You know, South Africa is rich in natural resources and diamonds. What can South Africa do to help that wealth trickle down to the rest of the South African society? Because, you know, it's a lot of poverty over there in that rich nation. Well, did anybody want to comment on that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's just the South Africans, I don't know about presently, but, you know, the diamond mines were owned by, what, De Beers? And the black South Africans is just like the Native Americans. They mm-hmm. don't have right to the resources in their own land, which is evil. It's mm-hmm. not even unjust, it's evil. Again, and these are Jewish companies exploiting the original people. That's not in the name of my God. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then exterminating or justifying apartheid so the people can't even profit from the wealth of their own land because they're not greedy. You know, mm-hmm. they had the abundance. God gave it to them. And then from other countries, they came and justified it by imprisoning people in their own land and not even allowing them to subsist mm-hmm. by bartering or selling what they find in their own property.
Well, let me ask this question then. You know, since when Nelson Mandela came along after he got out of prison and became the president, they were able to develop a new constitution. See, I'm interested in what's happening now, you know, the meaning of Nelson Mandela to South Africa as it moved forward. How can they, how do you see them creating a society that would benefit the whole South African, white, black, different religions, et cetera, like that?
Well, you know, it's, you know, I'm still trying to get like Nelson Mandela. I mean, like Joseph. In the Bible, when his yeah. brothers sold him, he came out after God had dealt with him. He had no hatred for his brothers, and God made him ruler. Mm-hmm. So Nelson Mandela transcended that, even after seeing how he was subjected and attempt to bribe and break him down, 27 years of solitary confinement. It's just like when the Mexicans come back to California, we all have to live together. So now the Dutch are in South Africa. So it's that transcendent type of a reality where, you know, I can't say I'm there because I would want revenge. You know what I'm saying? But I'm serious. You know, I saw yeah. the movie. They're like killing and shooting little girls and women and men. But the reality is, I mean, you know, the reality is that's on a physical level. On a spiritual level, now they're a mixed population. And so the reality is in moving forward, because karma will repay those, you know, yeah. the scales of balance will get those that need their correction and their evolution. Now they have to work towards some type of progressive government okay. so that all will have parity and equality, much like this country, which has never been realized for Native Americans, for African Americans, and the Caucasians, because they're the immigrants as well.
Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that... I know it was years ago in 1999 when I went to South Africa, and I remember some elderly ladies sat me down and said, okay, what's going on in America? You know, how's it? How is it for our young people? What is life really like? I mean, that was like at the kitchen table, and I wanted to know, do you want me to give you the short version or the long version? But what I'm saying is that there's a kind of a sister country of the roots people. I'm not talking about the big presidents and the rulers. I'm saying mom and pops on the block, you know, people in the she bins, which is like the homemade bars, listening to Marvin Gaye and listening to our music. And everywhere you look, you see pictures of Tupac and Bob Marley. And you'd be surprised at how a country that far away is paying close attention to what's going on in Black America. Mm-hmm. And even the word Black America sounds old fashioned in 2013, but that's how it is when you're in Africa. They're like, okay, so what's going on? Soul brother, you know, soul yeah. sister, what's going on? They're checking us, and I think we need to do something together.
Definitely, with the Civil Rights Movement and Dr. King. Geza, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, your question kind of has two components, because one of them, of course, is political, and we're sort of talking about that, and then the other one is the sort of the hidden economic one that controls the diamond mines and all of the lack of parity and lack of equality economically. It's really a fundamental problem, and it goes all the way back to the issue of private versus public property. And I don't even need to say any more about it than that. That's really the issue that is controlling. If you have that much private property and it's that valuable and it's owned by a few families, I mean, you know, I can't really go into it any further. We all know the question, you know. But that's the economic one. The political one is in some ways being handled, and it's very, very hard to. But, you know, people have a, you know, renewed sense of purpose and identity in South Africa, and also a lot of morale has you know, really built that nation, I think.
Okay. But before we turn away from you, Gates, just before we go into our community calendar, I want to talk to you and Patrick a little about some of the projects that's happening over to the Vortex, the project that you're working on with the studio. Can you tell us just a little about that?
Thanks, yeah. And, you know, we've installed, Patrick and I have installed a recording and multimedia you know, add-on to the Vortex. It's not really part of the Vortex. It's a independent kind of nonprofit, I guess you could say. And we're providing tech support and media support to Vortex projects. Melvin is coming in with a mentorship program that we're really excited about. And we're going to be, you know, basically providing that with the tools and some of the expertise that's needed to do a, you know, like a multimedia 101 starter course to you know, plant, you know, different groups of people, you know, veterans, at-risk youth, you know, you name it. Even the busing model is a good one of putting people from different neighborhoods together so they can cross-pollinate, and creating a you know, a space where people can learn. And that's about it.
Okay, and then you hope to work closely with Skid Row Studios also?
Yes, I understand that you're bringing Skid Row Studios into the picture in some way, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that pans out. And I'd also like to, introduce Patrick,
because
he's
Patrick,
doing a lot of...
Yeah, Patrick, can you holler at him, Patrick, and tell him what are you doing over there with the Vortex?
Well, just to add on to what Gaze has been talking about, I'd like to sum it up in this way. Technology has finally gotten to a point where it's filtered down to, I hate to use class words, but let's say the middle class, or not the elite, not the corporations, okay? 10 years ago, it was the corporations that controlled broadcasting. They controlled editing. They controlled the technology, the cameras. They controlled pretty much all aspects of it. And now it's gotten to the point where, you know, a hardworking person, you know, who can save up some money can get a high-quality camera, can get a decent computer, can get some editing software. They have YouTube and Vimeo. They have the internet. And now we can take communication and kind of take control of it back from the corporations. And whether that means... you know, silly videos, you know, slice of life moments, an artistic expression, you know, whatever it is, at least that's our decision to make with it. And if we can utilize that to organize and to express certain ideas or movements or education, or to point out some injustices, more so, you know, this gets into journalism and media, you know, which right now is a current debate over who controls the media. Well, how do you define the media? You're talking about CNN and Fox and ABC. Well, you're talking corporations. But journalism was always meant to be in the hands of the people and of the villages. And we're trying to create our own little village there at the Vortex.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. All right, now let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back and talk about the proposed ban on feeding the homeless, and also do some poetic reflections and a little on Nelson Mandela.
This is the community calendar for the month of December. Saturday, December the 14th, from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., LAPD, that's Los Angeles Poverty Department, invite you to their holiday party. They're going to have a live band featuring the LA Players. There will be fabulous food. It will be a community potluck. Also, the video of Micro History, which were performed in several locations throughout Los Angeles, will be shown. And the location for the party, is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. And for more information on this event, please contact Austin at lapovertydepartment.org, or you can call him on his cell phone, 310-923-5819. That's 310-923-5819. Sunday, December the 15th at 3 p.m., the United University Church Peace Center, Spiritual Youth for Justice and Peace, Interfaith Communities United for Justice and Peace, is sponsoring an interfaith gathering on human rights to bring attention to immigrant rights, workers' rights, housing and social services rights. There will be special speakers and also featuring a special dramatic performance of If the Shoe Fits. This is Voices from Solitary Confinement. And the reading will be by actors from Drama Stage Qumran Theater, Cornerstone Theater, and Public Work Improvisational Theater Company. All are welcome to attend. This is a free event. And also there is free parking. Refreshments will be served. And the location, once again, is the United University Church on the campus of USC in the Fishbowl Chapel, 835 West 34th Street, Los Angeles, at the corner of Jefferson and Hoover. For more information, please contact 818-605-7188. That's 818-605-7188. And we're asking you to save this date in January, Tuesday, January the 14th. The Veterans Community Theater Workshop will begin again, and this is for veterans and non-veterans. And the time will be from 5 to 8 p.m., and we'll start a 10-week session. This session will consist of training stage managers and training production assistants. The registration fee is $25, which will go for supplies. The instructors will be Melvin Ishmael Johnson, Geza X, and Patrick. For more information and registration or to pre-register, please contact Drama Stage 1 at yahoo.com or 213-908-6587. That's 213-908-6587. Upcoming guests on the Qumran Report, Monday, December the 16th, will be Jamal McNeil. He's a great actor and a great director. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1 at yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. We're back with our in-studio guest. And I would like to talk about a motion being put forward for consideration by the City Council about a ban in relationship to feeding the homeless. Let's play a clip from an interview I did about 2 months ago on the Qumran Report with two members of Hunger Action LA, Frank Tamborillo and Jerry Higgs. The clip is about 5 minutes. Motion is going over about the volunteer food distribution line in Hollywood. Can you speak on that for a little while? Either one of you, Jerry? What's happening with that?
Well, what it is, they're trying to shut it down. They're complaining about feeding the homeless. They want to actually just move it away to somebody else's neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting a lot of flack about drug use and rowdiness and stuff. But what it is, I don't think it's pretty much a lot of people are in the neighborhood is doing this. I think it's outsiders that don't want this thing to keep going on.
Is it close to where the farmer's market is at?
Actually, it's at Sycamore and Romaine, so it's kind of on the border of Hollywood and West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Jerry was saying, this is really a local issue that could be worked out if people were talking to each other rationally. But there's been such an exaggeration of the kind of things that are bound to happen when there are some people with mental illness. You know, of course, there's going to be some issues here and there. But what's happening is they've sort of exaggerated it into a case that's even going to result possibly in a citywide motion by Councilmember Tom LaBonge. And so what we are really resisting is any kind of effort to trample on our constitutional rights to assemble. Mm-hmm. You know, there really should be a right to share food, a right to eat in public, and we many organizations in California attempted to address this earlier. We the Homeless Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. That was one of the issues that Jerry was talking about when we went up to Sacramento, and it basically just says that if you're in a society that allows people to become homeless, you know, just like people can become very wealthy, they can become very poor, then you know, you have to allow them to do whatever they need to do in public. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not saying that we're trying to promote a homeless lifestyle or anything like that. But if somebody is homeless, there are a lot of things they can't help but do in public, and eating is one of them. Mm-hmm. And it's a fundamental human right. It's even more fundamental than the Constitution. So the West Hollywood issue is just a case where I think people, there's been a little bit of hysteria. And sure, there's problems. There's going to be problems at any kind of, you know, any kind of volunteer operation. But mm-hmm. this could be worked out locally instead of being made into a citywide issue.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we're going to be needing these programs even more now that they're doing these cuts to CalFresh. Mm-hmm. Because where are they going to go? A lot of people depend on these places to, you know, to eat.
Can you explain exactly what it is, the food line, exactly what they do?
Well, it actually is a time to get a hot meal. Mm-hmm. Majority of people that don't have, you know, the money, if they get in, okay, I'll give you an example. People that are on general relief, they have a certain amount, $200 and something, mm-hmm. Every month, and plus a small portion of food stamps to last through the whole month. And they have to go to food pantries, food banks, in order to survive. Mm-hmm. You know, because actually I've talked to a lot of seniors that are actually saying that they only can eat once a month. And thing is, once a day. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they don't have the resources. One, you're a senior citizen. You can't, especially if you don't have transportation. You can go to the food banks. You can't go to the food pantries to get the food and stuff to bring it back to prepare for yourself. So,
how many times a day do they serve food?
At this food line that's the subject of all the controversy in Hollywood, it's once a day. Mm-hmm. So it's just one time at 6 in the evening. But they do it every day, including Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays. And like Jerry said, for a lot of folks, that's going to be their only chance to get a meal. Because when you're homeless, you don't have cooking facilities. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of limited in what you can get. Even if you do have food stamps, you know, what are you going to do? Sit and open cans of stuff or carry around, you know, mm-hmm. huge items that you can't refrigerate, that you can't store. So, like he said, there's actually going to probably be more of a need for these programs as food stamps and other programs are cut.
Okay, I want to get a comment from Michelle, but first, let me just say how important it is for the community members to get out to your city councils and your neighborhood councils and use your 2 minutes in public comments. Let them know how you feel. Get organized and go out in large numbers, and then they will listen to you. Don't let the conversation get diverted away from the real problem, and that is we need more low-income housing to get people off the street. So I want Michelle to comment on.
Well, very quickly, what's your name, Giza?
Hi.
Okay. Giza.
Giza.
Mm-hmm. I don't agree with something you said. I mean, with mm-hmm. all due respect, you know, I respect the fact you can express yourself as I do. You said the issue is public property with regards to the wealth of the diamonds or gold or any other resource found in Africa. Right. The issue is not the abundance or the existence of public property. The issue is greed.
Private property.
The issue is greed. The issue is white supremacy and the greed that it breeds. Okay, and the redistribution of land, taking from those that have abundance that are not white, okay, to justify their hegemony and their imperialism. That is the issue. Okay?
I have no argument with that.
What you're saying was like justifying, you know, redistribution of the South African diamond mines, I mean, which completely, you know, exhibited the people or forbade them from, like I said, profiting or even subsisting from their wealth that God gave them. And no one can own the land. I wrote a poem about that, but I don't want to talk about it. I'll let the poem, you know, express that. It's, you know, yeah. God is the land. But about, you know, God gave us land. But about the food, you know, I went to the city council, you know, to speak to Mr. Labonge. He's attacking what the system has created, the homeless population. First of all, it's civil engineering. So it's an attack on the people they have put in the trash and commission the police to murder. So it's a easy form of a genocide that they've been trying to perpetrate for about 400 years. I see against largely African-American people, people of color, impoverished people who they consider undesirable, they don't want anymore. And, you know, they've allowed us to be fed, maybe genetically engineered foods, experimenting on those people. So now they want them to disappear because they're continuing to regentrify. So I think, you know, the people have to know that, you know, they're there on psych meds and they get off the street because, you know, they're going to continue to regentrify. And this is just but one form of attack on those people that, you know, again, in this genocide to exterminate those people that they consider undesirable.
Okay. Let me get on into, and like I said earlier, it's up to the community members to get out there and let your voice be heard. You know, use the system that's in place. I want to get into some performing. I want to got a couple pieces I want to perform. I want to open up this performance with a piece by Dr. Mungo, and then we're going to go around and read for Dr. Mungo.
This poem is Pick Up Jacks. It's Charles Play. With a little bit of fiction coupled with fact, this poem deals with the subject of every man Jack. Jumping Jacks, Cracker Jacks, Spring Hill Jack, Lumber Jacks, Steeple Jacks, One-Eyed Jacks. But along came this Jack from the far side of the tracks, crawling, slithering past security checks, a leader and perpetrator of terrorist attacks. This Jack is on the loose running wild, hither, thither, hawking, stalking, unsuspecting prey, destructive ideologies, his forte, foreplay, making for a bad hair day. If you help me get him, hunt him down, force him underground, but keep him in sight, I'll make his life a miserable 24/7 nightmare. See, I had him once, but he got away. Disguised as a jack tar sitting on the dock of the bay, this jack is on the loose running wild, a murderous psychopathic child, an egotistic monster with a jack-leg smile. He turned an inch into a mile. Now there's two jacks, three jacks, pick up jacks. This jack doesn't jog jack, eat flapjacks or cracker jacks. Play jack stones, jack straws, or blackjack. Dance the ball in jack, or drink applejack. Maybe every now and then a shot of jack as he plots his next attack. This jack, that jack. A radical, fanatical, maniacal jack. Crackpot jackass jack, looking for a jackpot. He'll jack you up, jack you all. Hijack, skyjack, carjack, bushwhack, straightjack at you. This jack doesn't jog jack, eat flapjacks or cracker jacks.
As I said, dance the ball in Jack, drink Apple Jack. Maybe now and then a shot of Jack as he plots his next attack. This Jack is on the loose running wild, an anthrax atomic Jack, biological, chemical, electromagnetic Jack, uranium, plutonium, nuclear Jack, a homicidal, suicidal, genocidal Jack. 5, 6, 7 Jacks, pick up Jacks. This Jack's a jackal with an international criminal jacket, a wily coyote, Tasmanian devil, Bluebeard Jack the Ripper, Jack Kevorkian Jack. Jack of all trades, Jack Smith, Jack Lighter, a jack-o'-lantern, Jack of knaves, Jack in boxes, fast as cheetahs, sly as foxes, 7, 8, 10, 12 Jacks. Pick up Jack. This Jack is nimble, lightning quick, with an AK-47 and jackknives wooing anxious fingertips, ready to shoot, stab, maim, kill, then hop away like a jackrabbit on a pogo stick. This is no Jack and Jill, Jack Jingle, Jack Sprat, Jack and Nori nursery rhyme. No Jack Frost, Jack and the Beanstalk fairy tale. This Jack is on the loose running wild, wrapped in a pea jacket, leather and flak jacket in the house that Jack built. Now some of these Jacks will get away, while others are made to rue the day. Flesh from camouflage hideaways, chambered caves and catacombs, byways, highways and seaways, 2, 4, 6, 8 Jacks. Pick up Jacks. 14, 20, 48 K Jacks. The time is running out. It's inventory time. You've got to hit the road, Jack. 10, 9, 8, 7 Jacks. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 Jack. Pick up Jack.
Okay, that's Dr. Mongo performing Jacks. Now we're going to move over to Jamal Asalam. He's going to perform something. Then we're going to move to Miss Mello, and then we're going to move to Michelle to perform something. Jamal Asalam.
For brevity of time, thank you, Michelle, for those comments. And thank you, Geza and
Patrick
and Cody also for being here. This is a great night in terms of L.A. poets and poets who want to say something, contribute, like Geza was saying, to the World Wide Web in memory of Nelson Mandela. My poem is, What Would You Give to End Apartheid? Would you give a less testes to end apartheid? Would you live 27 years of your life on Robben Island to end hatred? Would you embrace your enemies and make peace with them? Would you, in all your infinite wisdom, protect those who have committed murder against your ancestors? Turn the other cheek. Would you respect every human being you meet and have the whole world respect you both high and low? Ask yourself, what have I done today to make this world a better place? Would you chant the poem Invictus daily in your heart of hearts and in hard times? Would you thank the gods maybe for your soul to be an unconquerable soul? Would you commune with the sick and the HIV positives to get them the medicine they need to live? Would you stand side by side former President Frederick Wilhelm de Klerk? Would you compromise centuries to appease a few colonists? Would you be worthy of a Nobel Prize as a tribute to your life and work for humanity? Ask yourself, would you stand in a white courtroom for judgment? Would you stand beside Randall Robinson or John Lewis and have history point to you for your third strike for freedom for some South African named Mandela. In that sweet story, To Kill a Mockingbird, a black man in the gallery says to Scout and others, as Atticus leaves the courtroom, take off your hats, bow on one knee, and thank God for Mandela. A truly great man passes this way.
Okay. It's going to Miss Miller to give us something, and then Michelle going to give us something.
I have a poem called Up From Negro Spirituals, Way Up, and I want to livocate it to all the beautiful people in South Africa and all who love them. Well, I know that in 1845, Frederick Douglass wrote about the sorrow songs that the enslaved used to sing when they were out doing work. And he said that slaves sing more to relieve an aching heart. And in 1903, Dr. Du Bois picked it up with the Souls of Black Folks, and the last chapter is called the Sorrow Songs. So in light of that, I'm thinking of spirituals. Up from those spirituals, to get up from enslavements, up from society's lies and ugliness of ghetto life, broken homes and church untruths and street pains, in general, got to get out of the way, whatever ails, is to be ever on the move, ever going forth, ever keeping joy in sorrow times, sorrow songs, ever nearby. La Willa. And to hear Hugh Masekela sing about Stimela, Stimela. Those are sorrow songs. To get up from that beating, the bad love, false no love, the self-doubt. To get up and out on an empty stomach, because who can eat that? And who can eat that? And all Jah will transform it. Like in the Bible days. You know, they gave us pig guts, and then we turned it away. You got to make lemonade when they throw lemons your way. To get up from down, like George Clinton say, get up on downstroke, the token, to get up, the last part prayer yet, ringing and ringing and ringing, like Masekela say, Stimela, and he's singing about the trains coming through the mines, and he comes to L.A., not far from Skid Row, and Hugh Masekela say, Stimela, Stimela. And I looked, and I saw Mary McKeever, and she stood there in Westwood, and she said, I am 62, and I will now vote in my country. And that was 1994. Up from Negro spirituals, up, 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 like James Brown said, get up. I feel good. Africa, those sorrow songs, those moaning songs, we gonna take those songs, and we're going to build a beautiful, beautiful world. South Africa, man, we love you over here. God bless you. Thank God for Mandela.
Okay, Miss Miller. Yes, okay, yes. Michelle, we got about 3 minutes to give us a good, solid poem.
Give thanks. Y'all spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
This is on the other reel. They take. Yes, they take. They take all. Do they have a soul? No. They don't know any other way. They take everything from those who they hate. They have no respect for those who they reject. Just for the heck of it, they take, for that is all that they know. They take because they are the devil. They took this land from the Native American, just like they were taken in Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan. They call me a witch and a bitch because I refuse to let them use. And they took my little baby away from me, and they say I'm crazy. Too much intelligence, then who knows? Really, they fear me, and because I will destroy this evil society with the truth. I still live each and every daily. This is just how that they stay up in power and authority, lying, stealing, and killing. They corrupt, perversions, evil, injustice. They whore. They say we want more imperialism, hegemony. They really seek to steal all of our energy, children, land. They take, and they are on the take, too. Stay away from them because they will blame you for all which they do. Beware, for they will copy you too. They call it transference of their guilt, but they will play that role to the hilt. The devil lies, steals, kills. He doesn't heal. The land, they will believe their own lies. They fix it and cover it up, and they will take everything. They say you have too much from you.
They say you have too much, they will take from you. Their lies, murders, and homicides, they will justify, they will hide. They look good on the outside because of Botox and plastics that they buy, but they got a bad vibe because they're purely evil. They rotten on the inside, blowing up lies and defamation while destroying each and every nation, because that is just how they stay on top, not just nationwide, but the big fat and satisfied on top of the whole motherfucking world. They take everything that they can, whether it's mind, body, soul, spirit, child, woman, or man. They take faster than you can take it, faster than you can make it, they take it. Do they have a soul? No. They're pure evil, they devils, and they take. Good Lord, please forgive me because I hate. But if you have promised me that you would repay all of them, save the souls that you can for their evil sins, the enemy cannot win unless we sin like them.
Okay, I'm going to do, well, we still got about 3 minutes. I'm going to do a quick little poem on Nelson Mandela. It's a poem I did a couple years ago for a friend of mine when he passed, Ron Allen, a poet out of Detroit. This piece is called A Trip to the Ether. Nelson Mandela has passed. He has transcended to the ether, but his spirit lives on. His spirit lives in his life as a symbol of forgiveness and moving forward. With only a short time and so much to do, his spirit reached out and touched you. With words like a lightning bolt striking out at an unjust world, like the twilight winking at the sunset, the morning dawn of the midnight thunder, a spectator tripping off the view. Tripping off me, tripping off of you. A timeless traveler trapped in the crack of time. Trapped in your mind. Performing in the game of life. A beacon of sanity in an insane world. So much to do but running out of time. The only thing free in this world is your will. Will you take command? Will you take a stand? A stand for right. Take flight in the spirit and ascend the stairways of knowledge. Knowledge of self. Nelson Mandela has passed, but look what he left.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Variety wanted to have a comment over there. We winding
down.
Oh,
I just wanted to comment on about the food ban in West Hollywood. Actually, this is something that's starting all over in every state now that I've been told. I talked to a governor about 2 weeks ago about how they're trying to take away the food stamp program and everything for people. And, you know, the government has been talking about these problems that, you know, that what they're going to do for at least 10 years now. And as far as the homeless problem goes, well, it's kind of hard to have, crowd control. But the whole intent of trying to help the public has been a very great success for all the organizations around California and every state out there that wanted to solve mm-hmm. this problem and help people. Okay. But when violence takes place, it's hard to control it, and you have people that's trying to serve food, then you have people that are fighting and things like that. People are putting their lives on the line as well and volunteering to help the people, and they really want to make this successful.
Okay.
Now, we can try to find a way maybe to put them in another public place, like maybe a facility where they're not outside or something like
that. Thank you. Yeah, I got to wind down. Yeah, get on out there, like I said early, and let yourself be heard. I would like to extend a special thanks to my many guests here. Thank you very much for talking about Nelson Mandela. And we don't want to forget about Wanda Coleman, who passed, the poet laureate here in Los Angeles. Please listen to past shows of the Coonround Report on iTunes, Facebook, Stitcher, and skidrow.la. I also like to offer condolence to the family of Reverend Archie Quinn, an individual I grew up with. Archie, rest in peace. Thank you for tuning into the Coonround Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Bring Back Nelson Mandela by Hugh Masekela.